MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Las Vegas for Gus Gussies with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, now part of the Beast and Family Podcast. We've got a great podcast for you guys. We're going to be joined in segment number two by Brandon Marks. He does an incredible job over at The Athletic. His main beat is two very prominent schools in North Carolina and Duke. No doubt about it, we're going to be diving in on both of them. I'm going to try to get his thoughts onto what we can expect out of Harrison Ingram. Was his struggles at Stanford a little bit more due to him? Was it due a little bit more due to the coaching staff? What in the world did go wrong with North Carolina last year? Was it the roster itself? Was it a little bit more between the ears? What we can expect out of Duke this season as well, and the big draft decision that they've got with Jeremy Roach as well, how the depth is going to be looking with and without him as well. So we've got a great chat that's coming up there in the final segment. I'm going to give you guys a roundup of all the news and notes we saw in college basketball over the last 24 hours. And something that we are noticing in college basketball as well, a little bit of a side note here, is a lot of players that were relatively prominent guys. I'm not going to say they were like incredible or anything like that, but someone like Noah Reynolds going to UW Green Bay, a lot of pretty solid players going to these bottom 100 KenPom schools. I do think that there's more and more guys that they want to try to be maybe the man that sort of leads a team out of the abyss. They're looking to be able to be that focal point of a program. I'm seeing more and more of that in the transfer portal, and that's actually something that I do plan on talking about on the podcast tomorrow. I've already got our guest in Matt Cox over at the Three-Man Weave teed up for that. So that is something that I'm going to be diving into tomorrow. Today, we're looking at those blue blood schools. We're also going to be taking a look at, with our good friend Brandon Marks, the ACC as a whole, how much it would benefit just everyone in the ACC if they can avoid years from the schools like Georgia Tech, Boston College, Louisville that we've been seeing in recent years where they just completely stink on ice. So we've got that on tap for today. And if you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways to be able to throw those in. First one is my Twitter timeline at @GNN_D1. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you are able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Did not get in any Twitter questions today. And like I said, we're going to have some short first segments moving forward until we can get into some of these conference previews. That's probably going to be more towards late May, early June, because we do have a lot happening in the transfer portal, but we've got a lot happening with Duke. Perhaps, in my opinion, is the number one team in all of college basketball in the way too early top 25. We've got a lot happening with North Carolina and the ACC, so we're going to be chatting about it with Brandon Marks of The Athletic next, right here on Coach Gus Eats with myself, Greg Eats Peterson, now a part of the Eats Family Podcast.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Are you ready to become a winning sports bettor? Schedule a call with SBIA to find out how their service can make you a long-term winning player. They've developed an innovative algorithm that maximizes units return, and they are so confident in their system that they offer a money-back guarantee. Sign up by October 31st and get their MBA package at no cost until they reach 10 net units. They treat sports betting like a business. So if you want to learn how to make your sports betting dreams a reality, visit them at SBIA1.com and check them out on social media at SBIA Sports.
We're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Christmas Eve with myself, Greg Eames Peterson, now part of the VEASAN Family of Podcasts. It is great to be joined by this man as Brendan Marks. He does terrific work over at The Athletic, taking a look at the great game of college basketball. His main beat is out there in the great state of North Carolina. Take a look at North Carolina Duke, but I know I've had this man on a few times to preview the ACC. He does an incredible job taking a look at this game that we all know and love, and there has been no shortage of headlines with regards to Duke and North Carolina this offseason, the way that college basketball should be, in my opinion. And to be able to follow Brendan Marks on Twitter, that is at Brendan R. Marks. So it's first and last name with a letter R in the middle. And Brendan, great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thanks so much for having me. You used to have an offseason, not anymore. There's always something to talk about.
We don't have an offseason as well when one of the teams that you follow, according to most people, is the consensus too early number one team in all of college basketball in Duke. We saw it about a week or so ago. The big news that Kyle Filipowski is going to be coming back to school. And I just think that this is absolutely massive. I'm not sure where you had it pegged in terms of a mock draft for the NBA. No doubt he wouldn't be like the number one pick because, well, there's that guy with the first name Victor out there that exists. And that's just absolutely insane. But what did you make out of Kyle Filipowski returning to school? Because that was one of the more shocking decisions I've seen in recent years. And no question about it, Duke, massive beneficiaries from getting a consensus top three guy from last year in terms of the recruiting cycle, and a guy that legitimately had a great freshman season coming back under the circumstances.
Yeah, absolutely. Talking to NBA scouts, even as you know, far back as like the beginning of March, a lot of them were saying that, hey, Kyle Filipowski, if he comes out, he's a first rounder. And so I think that certainly he understood the enormity of the opportunity that he was passing up in order to come back. But from everybody who I talked to, it sounds like this is a guy who, A, truly loves college, really likes the college experience, had a great time at Duke, enjoyed being a part of John Shire's first team there. Secondly, I think there's an opportunity for him to improve his stock. You know, we are talking about a guy who probably would have been a first round pick, but there's a big difference between going at pick 28 and going at pick 10. So if he can help his draft stock, if he can potentially play himself into the lottery, which certainly I think is on the table, then that would be something that you can understand his line of thinking. And lastly, I think he's pretty frustrated with the way Duke's season ended. You know, the Blue Devils get bullied and sort of fall to Tennessee in the second round, don't even make it to the Sweet 16. I think that was a big surprise. And I think it's a guy who wants to have more college success. You know, Duke won the ACC tournament title this year, but he's looking for more. And you put all that together, and like you said, Duke is a huge beneficiary, and I would not at all be surprised if he starts next season as a preseason All-American.
Yep, no question about it. And for Duke, we know that they're going to have a lot of their pieces returning from last season on top of an incredible freshman class as well. The one question mark, though, right now is Jeremy Roach, because he decided to declare for the NBA draft, but he is going to be maintaining his eligibility. He's going to be going through the process. How big is it, the decision of Jeremy Roach? Because I think that this Duke team is going to be fine without him, but I think the big reason why a lot of people do have them number one right now is that it feels like the expectation is that he's just going to go through the process and then inevitably return to Durham.
And I understand people who feel that way, because quite frankly, it does not appear that there is an NBA appetite for Jeremy Roach right now. He's on the smaller side. He's 6'1", you know, 170 pounds soaking wet, has an injury history, hasn't been incredibly productive, doesn't necessarily shoot the ball super well from a three. Like, you know, all the things that NBA teams are looking for, not necessarily the things that he's thrived at, but that doesn't mean he's not a really good college guard, and it doesn't mean that he couldn't help Duke next season. You know, to me, I think there are two schools of thought here. The one is that, like we just said, there's no NBA appetite, so why wouldn't you come back? Why wouldn't you play another season at Duke? Why wouldn't you want to be on a preseason number one team? And maybe after making the Final Four two seasons ago, actually win a national title this year. So certainly I understand that line of thinking. There is another one, though. And I think that there is a line of thinking that once you test mentally, you're out the door. And in talking to some people around Duke, I would not be surprised if Jeremy Roach does ultimately stay in the draft, just because he's seen his buddies come and go for the past couple of seasons. So like you said, it's going to be an impactful decision, but I don't know that it is as solid as many people think it is that he's definitely going to be back.
I think that that's such a good point that you do bring up, as we do have Brendan Marks, who does great work over at The Athletic, joining me on the podcast. And even if he doesn't come back, I just take a look at bringing back someone like a Tyrese Proctor being so massive for this team. We saw Mark Mitchell have his moments as well. And then all these star-studded freshmen, they're coming in. Can you remember a Duke roster that is quite as deep as this one? Because with Duke, typically this is a team that they've really got that nice seven-man or so rotation going back to the Coach K days. He would never necessarily be a guy that would be going like 9 or 10 deep, but I feel like Duke could be able to do that, and while still being able to go 9-plus deep, have a really good play from those number 8 and number 9 guys if they so choose to do so as well.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, it's not often that you can have, you know, 5-star recruits who are going to be down in the 8th or the 9th man. And that's the reality of the situation Duke is looking at next year, especially if Jeremy Roach comes back. I agree with you. I don't know that I can think of a Duke team that's quite as deep as this one is. I mean, especially if Jeremy Roach comes back, you're talking about 4 or 5 starters coming back from last year. Then you're also still adding the number 2 recruiting class in the country with 4 top 25, 4 top 30 guys. Oh, and then also you still have an available transfer spot to go out and add another rim protector, someone who's maybe not quite the Derek Lively beast on defense, but who can add to your team in that way. So listen, hey, John Shire gets paid a lot of money to figure out how to play 10 or 11 guys. And with the way this roster is shaken up, he's going to have to get creative and find minutes for everybody.
Yeah. Sometimes that is some of the hardest things to do as well. But you know what? I would like to be able to get paid all that money and have those weapons at my disposal to see what I could do as well. So that is going to be a lot of fun for him. And it is going to be very interesting to see how this program retools as well, because North Carolina has hit the transfer portal hard and heavy, bringing in 4 guys as we speak right now. Jalen Weathers over from Louisville, Paxton Wojcik from Brown, Cormac Ryan from Notre Dame, and Harrison Ingram from Stanford. I think we're both in agreement here. Harrison Ingram is the biggest of these 4 players, but what have you made out of North Carolina's offseason thus far? Because they do lose a few guys, most notably Caleb Love, and it just felt like this team needed a reset after they made that just incredible run
as unbelievable as it is to say, just barely over 12 months ago. And now they're coming off of the first number one to not make the NCAA tournament in recent times. And I do feel like they've done a good job of being able to really just wash away what they did have last season, and now they're turning it forward with a little bit of a new look.
And I would agree with you, and I think a lot of UNC fans would agree with you, that it was time for some new blood at North Carolina. And so for as magical as that Final Four run was in 2022, like you said, you become the first number one preseason team to not make the field since 1985, and clearly you got some issues. So six guys go out in the transfer portal, two more are out of eligibility. It means you're going to have eight new faces in Chapel Hill. And I know UNC fans are already ready to bury Hubert Davis, but I really give him a lot of credit. I think that this offseason he's done a nice job of being transparent about what this team's weaknesses were last year, namely three-point shooting and ball movement. And he's gone out and he's attacked aggressively to get guys in the portal who fill those needs. You know, I'm in agreement. I think Harrison Ingram is the most consequential of those four transfers so far. I think he's the only one who's probably guaranteed to start, although I wouldn't be surprised if Cormac Ryan from Notre Dame ends up starting at the two guard next to RJ Davis. But both of those guys are guys who can pass the ball. They're fundamentally sound. They can shoot the ball. Cormac, obviously, is a guy who has had success in the ACC, has hit better than 35% multiple seasons. So I think Hubert Davis has been really smart, and he's been very wise in picking his spots about where to go and how to address the specific weaknesses that his team had last year and to turn them into strengths this year. Again, North Carolina still has two vacancies left to fill, still room to add more good players and to make this roster even better.
Yes, they do. And when it comes to North Carolina as well, how much of their struggles last year did you feel like weren't necessarily due to talent, but were a little bit more internal? Because I know that you put out an amazing piece on The Athletic a little bit over a month ago when it was known that North Carolina was not going to be able to make the NCAA tournament. And it felt like expectations got a little bit unrealistic, and they were ultimately victims of the success that they had in the 2022 NCAA tournament, because to call it what it was, they did have some very good fortune along that run, and maybe it built them up to be a little bit more than they should have been coming into last season.
Darn near perfect way to put it. This is a team that struggled with handling the pressure related to the expectations of being number one. You know, when we think North Carolina, we think Blue Buds, you know, we think Duke, we think Kansas, we think Kentucky. Like, these are the elite of the elite in college basketball. And yet, outside of that 2022 Final Four run, which, as we've already said, was one of the more unlikely that you and I can remember, this is not a group of kids who had a lot of success. They hadn't had necessarily what we would call a conventional North Carolina college experience. You know, the year before that, they were the first Roy Williams team to lose in the first round. He retires. The year before that, you know, had the tournament happened, they would have missed it entirely. Like, you know, this is a team that had struggled for a few years. And so for the first time, you had college age kids being told that they were really good and they were special, and everyone was glad to see them and excited for them. And so then when they lose four games in the first month of the season, that was like a harsh wall of reality coming and just smacking them in the face. And quite frankly, they were never able to readjust. But I think, you know, this is a team that has now sort of washed its hands of a lot of those players. Obviously, there are a few who are going to be back, but it's going to be a totally different team, totally different expectations. And quite frankly, based on what we saw last year, I think that's probably for the best.
I do agree with you. And there are going to be some of the same old there. Armando Bacot, who feels like he's been in college basketball for forever at this point. Him coming back is absolutely massive for North Carolina. I like the fact that they retain RJ Davis as well. But what are your expectations for Harrison Ingram? Because I thought that he was a very interesting player. Being out here on the West Coast, had a chance to see him quite a bit in the Pac-12. And I felt like he underachieved at Stanford. But the more that I watched him, the more I think it was just honestly bad coaching from Eric Haas, which this is another topic for another podcast on another day, but I have no idea how he's still employed at Stanford at this point. But I'm really excited for Harrison Ingram, and I do feel like this could be the perfect fit for him. And as I just alluded to, I think that this is a nice buy low spot for North Carolina, because I think ultimately Harrison Ingram's stock was so low because he was just receiving improper coaching.
Yeah, like Harrison Ingram, you know, this is a guy who was a five-star prospect coming out of high school, McDonald's All-American. North Carolina recruited him pretty heavily coming out of high school. I mean, North Carolina really wanted Harrison Ingram the first time around. And, you know, it's one of those examples that we're starting to see more and more in college basketball these days, college athletics in general, really, where You don't get a guy out of high school, you save that file, tuck it away, and in 2 or 3 years you come back around and see if you can land him in the portal. But I agree. I think that he is, as I've said, the most consequential transfer that North Carolina has added so far. He immediately slides into the three spot for the time. I mean, as somebody who is going to be asked to space the floor around RJ Davis, provide some room for Armando Bacot down low. But the other thing that I think that he does really well, and that I think North Carolina is going to be able to showcase a little bit better this year than perhaps was done at Stanford, is he's a really interesting point forward passing prospect. You know, Harrison Ingram can come off of ball screens. He can play in the pick and roll. He can make reads. He can hit those kickouts. And now you're talking about having RJ Davis and Cormac Ryan and a couple of other shooters out there. It's a really interesting wrinkle to North Carolina's offense that, quite frankly, it probably hasn't had since it had Theo Pinson back during Roy Williams' last national championship team. And so, yeah, if you're a UNC fan, I think Harrison Ingram is the guy to be excited about. And like you said, buy low opportunity, and I think the Tar Heels are hoping they're going to be able to sort of restore him to that sterling pedigree he had coming out of high school.
And I'm so glad that you used the word restore there as well. As joining me on the podcast, we know Brendan Marks of The Athletic, because something that needs to be restored as well is a little bit more balance in the ACC. We saw Miami make the nice Final Four run in this past NCAA tournament, but it's something that we've talked about the last few years on this podcast. The ACC being incredibly top-heavy. You've got your couple really good teams. I think that Miami, despite the fact that they're going to lose a few pieces from that Final Four team, once again, they should be relatively rock solid. Duke, we just laid it out. They should be the number one team as of right now, certainly subject to change if someone like Hunter Dickinson goes to a big bomber school or something like that, but Duke is going to be right there. Virginia, despite some of their losses, they're rock solid. And I do think that North Carolina is going to be able to come back to prominence as well. But we have seen schools like Boston College. I'm looking at you last year, Louisville, Georgia Tech, go down the list of these teams that they just have really let down the conference. And how big of a key is it for all these schools in the ACC that they just don't have some of these schools like Boston College and Louisville completely bottom out like they did last season? Because I feel like this is what's really been ailing the conference the last 3 to 4 years.
Yeah, absolutely. Because when you have multiple games a year against teams like that, and, you know, there's no better example than Louisville last year, which was one of the worst, you know, four teams in all of high major college basketball. Anytime you're playing that team, you have nothing to gain because you're supposed to kick the crud out of them. But if you lose, it absolutely tanks the rest of your schedule. You know, it makes your resume look awful. And so last year, I do think it was also a dual problem in that you didn't have any truly elite teams either. You know, at least 2 years ago, Duke was a consistent top 10 team throughout the year. You had an elite program that you could look to and say, look, this is the best that we've got. Last year, you didn't have a single ACC team get a top 3 seed in the NCAA tournament. And you just can't have that if you're a league of that size, and especially not one that has that basketball pedigree. So again, you know me, I'm an optimist. I like to try and think that things are going to be better this coming season. There are some intriguing teams out there. You know, you look at Syracuse is obviously moving away from Jim Boeheim. What does that look like? Louisville, for all that went wrong last year, they've had a nice offseason so far. They had Sky Clark from Illinois. They bring in Trenton Flowers. He reclassifies, comes in a year early, a five-star prospect. You know, Virginia Tech just got Hunter Couture back. You had an interconference transfer from Notre Dame to Syracuse of J.J. Starling, a five-star guard going there. So I think there are some interesting pieces here. There are some interesting teams at play, but certainly it's the biggest thing that the ACC cannot afford is to have those bottom feeding teams, because they don't add any value to the league. And all they do is present, you know, hurdles and blockages for some of the better teams in the conference.
No question about it. I do think that Notre Dame picking up Micah Shrewsbury, that's a good starting spot. Damon Sotomayor, I wouldn't say had the world's greatest success when he was coaching at Pacific a few seasons ago, but being able to get him in is big, because Georgia Tech just has not been very good on the recruiting front in recent years. And when you bring in someone from the old Portland Trailblazers, that should be able to help out as well. And a man that does a great job of helping out whenever he joins this podcast is you, Brendan. You do an incredible job taking a look at all things college basketball. We're at The Athletic. And as you mentioned, it used to be in college basketball, like even as recently as about 6 or 7 years ago, that this time of year we were kicking back, we were relaxing. As John Rothstein would say, we sleep in May. No sleep to be had this May, because there's a lot of news that's going on, NBA draft decisions, guys in the transfer portal, and you're doing a great job of keeping up with it all. So let the good people know what's on tap for you and how people can follow along on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, absolutely. I share all my stories to The Athletic. If you don't have a subscription, I'm biased, but I think we have the best sports writing in the world. You get all of my stuff on college basketball, but also our whole college basketball staff, college football, NFL, NBA, MLB. It really does have every sport that you could possibly ask for. So all my stories are over there. And like you said, we don't sleep in May. We sleep for like 3 days randomly squeezed in the middle of July. So I'll have more transfer portal coverage. I'll have more draft coverage in the next couple of weeks. And, you know, for me, this is also the time of year I get to do some fun stories, get to do some enterprise, some look back. So hopefully we'll have some of those come in the next couple of months as well.
That should be a lot of fun. The All-Star break. We get a few days off for the All-Star break in baseball. So that'll be nice. But I know that Brandon is doing a great job taking a look at all of this. He is certainly going to be able to take a look at a pair of very interesting teams for this upcoming season at Duke and North Carolina. They've been making moves this offseason, and it is always a pleasure to get Brendan aboard. A big thanks to him for joining me on Coast to Coast Deep South, part of the VSIN Family Podcast. And coming next, it's that time of the podcast to give you a little bit of a roundup as to the news and notes we saw in college basketball over the last 24 hours.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, everybody? This is Stephen A. Smith. When I'm not at my day job, First Take, you can find me in my studio hosting the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast. Tune in every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, at the very least, as I bring you all new episodes that feature the biggest headlines in the world of sports, pop culture, business, and politics. You'll hear my unfiltered opinions on those nauseating Cowboy fans, the chaos in Washington, D.C., and trending topics on social media, as well as my straight shooter interviews with top celebrities and game changers. And I occasionally give out love advice. Yes, it's true. If you want to know my true feelings about something, I'll give it to you straight. So listen to the Stephen A. Smith Show podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcast.
Hello, back to Lovely Las Vegas for Cuskussies with myself, Greg H. Peterson, now part of the Beast and Family podcast. It is always great to be joined by Brendan Marks, who does an incredible job over at The Athletic. We have seen lots of intrigue from North Carolina this offseason. That is certainly going to be a program to watch, as if we weren't going to be watching them already. But with them and Duke being right now, in my opinion, the top team in all of college basketball roster-wise, there is no shortage of things for our good friend Brendan to take a look at. And also, he's going to be taking a look to see if we could see a little bit of a return to prominence for some of these other schools in the ACC. So a big thanks to Brendan for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast. I give you a roundup of all the news and notes we saw in college basketball over the last 24 hours. Noah Reynolds, it looked like, was going to Wisconsin. He decommitted a few days ago, and he has now decided that he is going to be going to UW Green Bay. How about this being just so massive for Green Bay? He last season, Reynolds, in a limited 19-game sample size, shot right around 33% from three, but 14.5 points, 2 assists per contest. UW Green Bay has been just really bereft of offense ever since you had Will Ryan, the son of Bo Ryan, take over. That just did not pan out for them whatsoever. Now they bring in Sonny Wicks. He was an assistant over at Wyoming, so that's a big reason why you did see the connection happen here. But bringing in someone like a Noah Reynolds to a school like UW Green Bay, that is absolutely massive for them. And we've been seeing in recent days a lot of, shall we say, lesser schools getting some nice players like Jordan Davis from Wisconsin. He decided that he is going to be going to Illinois State. He didn't necessarily tear it up with Wisconsin, but he saw 18 starts for them last season. We know his brother is currently playing in the NBA right now. 5 points, 3.5 boards, shot right around 31% from three-point range. You'd like to see that be a little bit better, but for Illinois State to land someone like a Jordan Davis, for Noah Reynolds to go over to a team like UW Green Bay, this is absolutely massive for these schools. So we have been seeing a lot more of a balance of power there. Robbie Barron, he was playing over at Northwestern last season. He has decided that he is going to be going to Virginia Tech. This is a nice get for the Hokies, a former top 100 recruit way back in the day, but a starter for a Northwestern team that was able to make the second round of the NCAA tournament last season. 7.5 points, 4.5 boards for his career. Shot 36% from three-point range as a 6'9" combo player. Very much fits the mold of Virginia Tech looking to play positionless basketball. I don't think that he's going to have quite the production that someone like Grant Basile had for them last season, but I think that this is exactly what they needed. Tevin Smith had a highly productive year at Denver last season. He's also heading to the Rising League, much like Noah Reynolds, and he's going to be playing for Cleveland State. In two seasons for Denver, you saw Tevin Smith put up 10.4 and 10.9 points per contest, was overall about a 32.5% three-point shooter. Not necessarily a guy that's going to dole out the ball a lot. 6'5", so you'd like to see him be a little bit more efficient, but I do think that this is going to be a solid pickup for our Cleveland State team that they're going to need to teach him a little bit of defense. Denver, they're one of your lesser teams in terms of defense in all of college basketball last season, but all in all, I do think that this is a relatively solid fit there. Sean Phillips is a 7-footer that last season was playing for LSU. Just didn't see a lot of minutes for the team. He was able to pull in there right around 2.2 rebounds per contest. He has decided that he is going to be going to Arizona State. We have really seen a little bit of a change with Mr. Hurley and his system over at
Arizona State, they were very much an offensive-first team. Sean Phillips, in my opinion, is more of a defense-oriented guy, 247 Sports. Had him rated out as the number 120 recruit in last year's class. He was a top 15 guy from the state of Arizona as well. So I do think that it is interesting that you've got those connections. But for Arizona State, they get a big man that should be able to clog things up down low. They had some very good success with Warren Washington this last season. So I'm going to be interested to see how Phillips is able to mold himself into the system, but I do think that that is a solid fit there, and clearly a changing of the way that we are seeing business conducted with Arizona State. You saw Chris Meadow decide that he is going from Fairfield, and he's going to be heading over to Stony Brook. It feels like a lot of players that fight for Stony Brook head to Fairfield and vice versa, but for Meadow, he just really fell out of favor in recent years. The season before, the 2021-22 season, was averaging right around 5.5 points per contest, was able to pull in a few boards. His best year came during the 2020-21 season, in my opinion. 5 points, 5.5 boards, was really good down low. And this past season did average a block shot per game, but 4 points, 3 boards on 13.1 minutes per game, fewest minutes of his career. It's a Stony Brook unit that was one of the worst rebounding teams in all of college basketball. And Meadow, he's only about 190 pounds, so he could use a little bit more weight on that frame. But him just being able to provide that size, I think, is going to be tremendous for the team. And it's something that is very much needed. How about what East Carolina is doing? They pick up Cam Hayes in the transfer portal. And I do think that in terms of schools that are really going under the radar with some of their additions, East Carolina is one of them. They pick up Hayes, who he began his career at NC State this past season while he was playing at LSU after being, by the way, a top 100 recruit as well. Was able to register 8 points, 2.5 assists per contest from three-point range, shot about 32.5% from three in his 2 years at NC State, was averaging right around 7.5 points, 2.5 assists per contest. But they also bring in Bobby Pettiford as well. He's a former top 100 recruit that was playing at Kansas last season. So I really like what this East Carolina team is doing. They're getting some highly touted guys. They're doing the best that they can with the program that they've got. East Carolina, in my opinion, was a little bit ahead of schedule last season with the way that they were able to compete in the American, and being able to bring in guys like Pettiford and Hayes, that should lead to some upside, especially when it comes to this backcourt, and they were able to do an okay job down last season as well. Also up from the great state of Wisconsin, how about Pierce Spencer going from Nichols over to UW-Milwaukee? Playing at Nichols, Pierce Spencer is used to playing up-tempo, and this is a guy that very much fits the mold of what UW-Milwaukee is looking to do under the tutelage of their coach, Mr. Lundy, as he last year supplied the team with 7.5 points, 4.2 rebounds, 1.6 steals, right around 3 assists per contest. Not going to light it up from 3-point range. Shot right around 32% from 3-point range, but for UW-Milwaukee, Bart Lundy was able to do a nice job turning the team around, having a lot of guys that played positionless basketball, were sort of jitterbug guys, with Pierce Spencer coming in, being used to playing in an up-tempo system. I think that this is a very good fit, and he should be able to have some very nice numbers over at UW-Milwaukee. So I absolutely love that fit, Sebastian Thomas. He was playing this last season at Rhode Island, and he's decided that he is going to be playing for Albany. And Thomas actually put up some decent numbers. He was able to see some starts towards the back half of the season. Not much of a score, 5.9 points per contest, but was able to dole out 2.8 assists per game. Now, he is going to need to improve the fact that he shot 25% from three-point range. Not that he needs to shoot like 50% from three or anything like that, but that was a little bit rough for him. But if you take out the first month or so of the season, he did fall a little bit out of favor, but I do think that he was able to work on his offense towards the back half of the season as well. I do think that for Sebastian Thomas going over to a school like Albany, this is big for them, because Albany has also been one of those teams that has been a little bit pesky in the transfer portal. They were surrounded by some off-court allegations last offseason, which limited them in the transfer portal. Now being able to pick up Thomas to go along with Amari Marshall, a nice shooting guard from Hofstra, Tyler Bertram, who a few seasons ago out in the America East for Binghamton was a double-figure scorer as well. This is absolutely massive, and I feel like Albany, under the radar, they're having a really good offseason as well. We saw Dominique Ford, who was playing over at Idaho last season, decided that he is going to be entering into the transfer portal, a kid from lovely Las Vegas, and he put up some solid numbers. Shot 39.5% from three-point range, 5.9 points per contest. Not necessarily the most well-rounded player in the world, but it's someone that can come in off a bench, is able to pop a few threes, so I think that he is going to be solid for someone. While Wyoming has lost a lot in the offseason, they did get Tulsa's top scorer from a season ago in Sam Griffin. Griffin, he just put up good numbers on a team that was unable to put up anything around him. 15.2 points per contest. He had 2 assists per game, shot 32% from 3, but I firmly believe that in this Wyoming system, he's going to be able to do a little bit better than that. Heck, you take a look at his numbers the season before with Tulsa, 14.5 points, shot a little bit higher from 3-point range than when he was at UT Arlington. Shot in his 2 seasons there, 37% from 3. He was in a scenario where at Tulsa, a bad shot for him was better than a good shot for someone else. It was just a band of misfit pieces. They're going to be looking to build that back up this upcoming season. And for Wyoming, it's a little bit of disarray for them. They were without Graham Ike last season. Hunter Maldonado, he's out of eligibility after playing 100 million billion years there. But I do think that Jeff Linder is a very good coach, and being able to land someone like Sam Griffin, I think that he's going to be able to make the most out of that. Jalen Miller was really glued to the bench the last 2 years at Rutgers. He has decided that he is going to be going to Oral Roberts, and these are the sort of guys that Oral Roberts has had a lot of success with. Taking a look at someone that was like a former top 200 or so guy, I believe 247 Sports had him number 205 in the class of 2021. Someone that's able to give you a little bit of facilitation, someone that's able to pop some threes, but at the same time, they just weren't able to see a lot of minutes at their previous stop. Trying to unearth some of these gems, I think, is something that they're going to be able to continue to do really well, even with losing their coach in Paul Mills in the offseason. But I do think that there's going to be a lot of similarities to the previous regime and what they're going to be able to do now. And being able to get someone like a Miller in place, I think, is big for them. Parker Braun, he decided that he is going to be hitting the transfer portal. Someone who had 6'8" has a really nice skill set. Last 2 seasons was a starter at Santa Clara. Last 2 seasons at Santa Clara averaged 7.5 points, 5.5 boards, able to pop threes, didn't necessarily shoot them well at about 28.5% from 3-point range, but is able to be a little bit of a clogger down low. I do think that he has the potential to become a little bit of a better scorer as well, so we shall see where he is going to be going. It was announced on a Tuesday, but Silas Sunday, who was playing over at Iona last season, he's decided that he is going to be going to Hofstra. He only averaged about 1.5 points and 1.5 rebounds per contest. Was a little bit of a touted guy, 7-footer, who he should be able to help Hofstra out a little bit down low. For the Pride, they just didn't have a lot in terms of post a season ago, so being able to bring in someone like that, I think, is going to be able to help out one of their main weaknesses. And when you lose guys like Amari Marshall along with Aaron Estrada, you do need to be looking at something else to be able to rebuild around. And I do think that bringing in someone like the 7-footer Mr. Sunday, I do think, is going to be able to help them out. Dena J. Harris has decided that he is going to be entering into the transfer portal. He was playing at Southern Miss this last season and had good numbers. He started a lot of the team's games, was able to put up 9 points, 5.5 boards. Not a guy that's going to go out there and shoot it from 3 at 6'7", so versatility that is a little bit limited, but he's an interesting add to the transfer portal. I think that there's a lot of mid-major teams that are going to be knocking on his door, and there are quite a few mid-major teams looking for some upside from Tafara Kapare, and he has decided that he is going to be going to Georgia Tech. Very clear that Georgia Tech is looking to add quite a bit of size. They're now under the tutelage of Damon Sotomayor. And Sotomayor, I remember him when he was coaching up at Pacific, because he actually spent some time in the NBA as an assistant the last year or two before deciding to take the Georgia Tech job. He was really looking to play some hard-nosed, slow-style defense, and that's what we're seeing with their transfers right now. They bring in Ebenezer Duwana, 6'11", big man from NC State. Kawasi Reeves was not necessarily a great three-point shooter, but 6'6", a good defender. Tyshawn Claude was a guy that could put up a double-double any given night at Western Carolina. I do think that Kapare is probably the lesser of all the guys that they brought in to this point, but he is someone that at 6'9", has a nice frame, is able to play some solid defense. So going to be very fascinated to see what happens with this Georgia Tech team, but it's very clear. They're looking to get bigger, and they're looking to guard it. DJ Turnitup Davis, an all-Big West player last season at UC Irvine, has decided that he is going to be going to Butler. I know that we were talking with one of our good friends, Lucas Harkins, on this podcast a few days ago. He does a great job of gauging Butler, and this is big for them, as with the Anteaters last season, Zot, he was able to average 15 points, shot 40% from 3. Not necessarily the most well-rounded player in the world. You could use him to be able to dole out the ball a little bit more, but he's a relatively solid defender, and on top of that, it's a big-time need for Butler. They just did not have guys that were able to hit shots, create their own shots, bringing in someone like a DJ Davis should be able to help on that front. Nate Martin, he was over at Texas State this last season, 8 points, 4.8 boards per contest. Not a guy with a lot of versatility, but he was able to do a relatively solid job down low. Probably not going to be him trying to replace Micah Hangladen, but it's a step in the right direction. He has decided that he is going to be going to Marshall. Marshall had a lot of success with being able to do a good job of dominating down low this last season. It was them turning over a little bit of a new leaf. I think that they realize this, bringing in someone like Amar Nu, plays honestly in a program that was the exact opposite of them in Texas State. Texas State, one of the slowest teams in all of college basketball, very much defense-oriented. I think could actually be good for this Marshall team because they are undergoing some changes, so we shall see how that fit goes. But you got Nate Martin heading on over to Marshall. Jonathan Curtis, in last season, was at SIU Edwardsville, averaged right around 4 points, 3 rebounds per contest. Was a starter for the team, but was more of a guy that just clogged the paint with a block per contest. He has decided that he is getting back to Jacksonville, and this is a good ad for Jacksonville. Jacksonville getting back to their roots. They were one of the slowest teams at all of college basketball last season, but they really fell short of expectations this past season. 2 seasons ago, they were able to do a nice job of being able to extend in the A-Sun because they played really good defense. This past year, that defense was not there. Bringing in someone like a Curtis, who he doesn't necessarily have a lot of flash like some of the transfers that they brought in last season, but he's just a hard-nosed guy that goes at it. I think that this is going to be good for them. Maximus Nelson, that's quite the name. He was a starter at Valparaiso this last season, averaged right around 4.5 points, 3 boards. A kid from Appleton, Wisconsin. I wonder who behind the mic on this show is also from Appleton, Wisconsin. He has decided that he is going to be going to IPFW, aka Fort Wayne. Shot about 34% from three-point range, 4.5 points per contest at 6'8". Liked him when he was over at Appleton North at the high school level. Was able to see some okay minutes over at Valparaiso this last season. Purdue Fort Wayne is always a team that's looking to bomb it from three-point range. They're always looking for very good versatility, and I think that he checks a lot of boxes that they are looking for. So I think that this is a tremendous add for them, and I do think that overall there is quite a bit of upside with this one. While they add him, they do lose JoJo Peterson as Mr. Peterson. They get a guy from Appleton and they lose a Peterson. Go figure there. He was able to give the team just 2 points per contest this last season. Was never really a great three-point shooter in his 2 seasons on campus. Shot 28% from three. So good trade-off there. Parker Williams, he was playing at St. John's this last season. He has decided that he is going to be entering into the transfer portal. It's inevitable when you have a coaching change like Slick Rick Pitino coming in at St. John's that you are going to be seeing a lot of movement. Parker Williams scored as many points as myself, so not necessarily unexpected there. We did see Chase Cormier. He was playing over at Northeastern this last season. He has decided that he is going to be heading on over to Wofford. Averaged about 3.5 points per contest. Was only able to shoot 30% from three for Wofford. The big question for them is who is going to be running the point for this team, because it feels like every single year for Wofford. They always have a nice point guard and they always lose him in the transfer portal. That happened with Jackson Pavelski this past season. But I do think that with Cormier, he is going to be able to help this team out a little bit defensively for one, and to be able to ascend his game a little bit more with regards to three-point shooting. So I do think that this is a nice upside add. Chico Carter, he's one of the more underrated shooters that you're going to find in the transfer portal. Last year at South Carolina, 9.8 points per contest, was able to shoot 47.5% for threes, a career 44.1% three-point shooter. Spent 2 years at Murray State, spent 2 years at South Carolina, which is why he goes a little bit under the radar, but he goes to DePaul, and I think that this is a good ad for a DePaul team that they are very Jekyll and Hyde. Carter has always been a little bit of a liability with his defense, but a guy that's able to knock down threes, that's exactly what DePaul does need, and they're able to check that box, and we're looking to check all the boxes for you right here on Coast to Coast Hoops. Once we get a little bit more clarity with the transfer portal, which I think is going to be in about a month or so, we're going to be starting up conference previews on this podcast. And if you do like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of 2 ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter timeline, at @JuneIn_D1. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast by that 5-star review. A big thanks to our good friend Brandon Marks of The Athletic for joining me on the podcast today, and I'll be coming at you guys every single day on this podcast, which means I'll chat at you once again tomorrow. Thank you.
Hey,
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.